opinions represented during this show may not necessarily represent those of KRMG or Cox Media Group.
Your host is Dan Witham, a financial advisor with offices at 8516 East 101st Street, Suite C in Tulsa. His office phone number is 918-398-8387. Dan is a branch manager with and securities offered through LPL Financial. Member FINRA SIPC. Now here's Money Talk on News 102.3 and AM 740 KRMG.
And good Sunday morning, everybody. My name's Russell Mills, and this is Money Talk. In the studio with me, as on every Sunday, live and local, Mr. Dan Witham and Mr. Steve Money. Remember, if you have questions for us today, you can text us at 95920. And my first question for Dan Witham, as it is every week, what book are we giving away this week, sir?
Well, that's a good question. The book this week, Russell, is called Beating the Dow with Bonds. It's by Michael O'Higgins, and he is the one who developed the Beating the Dow strategy, which has become very popular over the years. This was back in the 90s when he developed the strategy, I believe, early 1990s, right about when I first became an advisor in the business in 91, I think is when I started. And this is an excellent book. It talks about using the 10 highest yielding Dow Jones stocks and using bonds and gold, actually, is in this strategy. Steve, you love that.
Boy, don't hear that very often, do you?
Gold's in the strategy. And what he does is he switches from one asset class to the other, depending on yields and treasury bills and all this stuff. And it's all explained in the book. He goes through very concise formulas in this book and explains to you how to buy these stocks and how to try to get higher returns than just owning the Dow Jones average, but you're actually owning a subset of the Dow 30 stocks. And we'll go into a little bit of how that works here on the show today. But if you want a free copy of the book, we'll send it to you along with information on our equity-linked certificates of deposit, which we may talk about a little bit later if we have time. And it's all free. Just give me a call at 918-398-8387. That's 918-398-8387. And leave us your name and your address, please, when you get our voicemail. We will send you the book, Beating the Dow with Bonds, and the information on the Equity Link CDs. Absolutely free, no cost and no obligation whatsoever. Before I forget, I want to talk about the video on our website about the Equity Link CDs. My website is moneytalktulsa.com, www.moneytalktulsa.com. And on the right side of the page, there's a thing that says featured links. And if you click on that, it'll take you to A, the annuity video, which Steve is so fond of. And then also the market-linked CDs certificates of deposit video that explains what the equity-linked or market-linked, as they're called, certificates of deposits are and how they function, what they are and what they're not. You know, there's some good things to them and some not so good things to them. And this is a short video. It's about 3 minutes long and gives you just an overview of the product itself and the concept. It's not a sales pitch. It's not telling you to buy any specific one. It's not going to tell you to buy any of them. As a matter of fact, it just explains what they are and how they work. And I like it.
So speaking of annuities, right before we went on the air, I had sent Dan a thing on Facebook this morning about some annuity seminar going to go on here in Tulsa. So we were talking about that, and honestly, we were kind of laughing about it, just to be blunt about it. But one of the things Dan was talking about was a person here in town that will sell these annuities to like people in their 70s. And you got to keep your money in there for like 16 years or what? There's a 20% hit or something like that?
Well, it's 20% in the first 2 years. It goes down, but it takes 16 years to get out of the entire back end hit, yes, on the annuity for the fees to go away, for the charge to go away, the sales charge.
So I always think in terms of somebody that just retired, maybe they're 60, 62, 65, something like that, and they, whether they know it or not, they get put into an annuity.
Right.
And
20 years later.
And 20 years later,
they get their money.
Dude, you're already kind of upside down on that life expectancy, you know? So.
Yeah, and it's not that they have to wait 20 years to get their money. It's just it takes at least 16 years to get out of the sales charge period if you take out more than 10% a year. And so there's some drawbacks to that. You know, annuities are a decent product for some people, but they're not for a lot of people, I would say. You know,
but when does the salesman get paid?
Upfront.
Not 20 years later,
The day you buy.
That's right.
The day you buy the annuity, they get paid. And, you know, annuities are sold. They're not bought.
That's right.
You know, I've said that many times, and I believe that. That's my belief, at least. I'm sure it's not everybody's belief, but that is my belief. And you just have to be careful. You have to look into what you're doing and make sure you know what you're investigating. And speaking of being careful, I spent all day yesterday playing in the rain.
Didn't your mother tell you don't play in the rain?
She told me not to play in the freeway.
What's next? Well, you were running with pencils too? Come on, man.
I work, well, as you know, I'm a reserve deputy with Creek County. Right. And so I was out working there was a swap meet out in at the Creek County Fairgrounds. And basically what they were doing was selling and buying parts from older model Fords, V8 Fords, older, very old Fords, and this was what I think the principle of the whole thing was, and they were trying to sell parts to each other. And a lot of the vendors were out, of course, in the rain all day, so there wasn't a whole lot of foot traffic out there. But some of the vendors were inside in the fairgrounds. They had allowed some of them to set up inside, and I got to meet with them and talk to a lot of nice people yesterday, one of which was one of my clients. As a matter of fact, I ran into out there at this thing, and it was a real pleasure to work at. They were very, very nice to me. They were great, great folks.
So what's the roundabout age, the average age out there that go to Model T and Model A swap meets?
It was up there. The people working, especially at concessions and things, it was up there. It was these people that have an interest in these cars. You know, some of them grew up around some of these cars, and so they're interested in these cars. But it was really neat. It was really interesting. And some people tried to sell me car parts, and I just look at them, I don't even know what it is.
Like, bro,
you know?
I don't even have a car, man.
I was like, all I can do is start it. That's about all I know right there as far as cars go. I am not the car guy, I will tell you that.
A testament to the genius, though, of Henry and the Ford family, that here we are, 100 years later, still selling parts, and there's still a thriving subculture.
Oh yeah,
built around the Model A and the Model T Fords. I think that's awesome.
Yeah. So given that the age was skewed a little bit on the upper end there,
yes.
Did any annuity salesman have a booth out there?
I did not run into any.
Just curious.
So that was probably a good thing. No, there were none out there. But it was very, very nice event, and they treated me so well. They kept trying to give me free food and free everything. I kept trying to say, no, I'll pay for this. I don't mind. I'll pay for it. I honestly don't mind. And they were just super nice to me. They were great people, great, very nice people. And the rain, you know, did slow things down a little bit for them, but it didn't dampen their spirits any. I'll give them credit.
So that is pretty cool, though.
Yeah, it was. It was a very nice day. I enjoyed it very much. And I've enjoyed working in Creek County so far. I've enjoyed it very much. Okay. What are the Dow Jones stocks, Steve? These little companies you probably never heard of, right?
There's 30 of them.
That's good. That's about as much 30, math as we'll try to do today. Yeah. They are these little companies like Verizon, IBM, you know, Pfizer, ExxonMobil, you might have heard of.
Little startups.
Yeah, Johnson & Johnson, Procter & Gamble, Coca-Cola, McDonald's, you know, companies.
Yeah. So I wish them the best, man.
These are fairly established companies. They've been around for a day or two. Apple's in there, as a matter of fact. Nike's in there, Goldman Sachs. And they're pretty well-established companies. They're companies that, for the most part, are probably not going anywhere. They're not going away anytime soon. Now, it has happened where some of the companies in the Dow have gone away over the years, but it's been a long time.
I was going to ask, so it's 30 now. It's been 30.
Yes.
Maybe, I guess, always will be 30. So how do they decide, I'm sorry, Mr. whatever.
You're number 32 now.
Right.
Mr. Zuckerberg is now going to be number 30, and you're off the list. How do they do that?
It's generally based on market capitalization is generally what the rules are established based on, but there's some deliberation and some decisions made by the board. Yes, and so they do decide, the Dow Jones. And so they do decide when to boot a company out and when to replace it with another company. And it does happen. You know, you've seen Apple and Microsoft come into the Dow 30 in probably within the last 10 years, I think they've been added to the Dow 30. And I don't worry about it too much. Most of the companies that get booted out are still huge companies. They're just not in the Dow 30 anymore, but they're still around. And so the Dow Jones is a very rather conservative average. You know, it's the blue chip average, if you will. And it is companies that are well established, obviously. And every single company, I'm looking at the list here, the Dow Jones, the Dow 30, every single company in the Dow 30 pays a dividend. The lowest dividend that they pay right now is about 1.18%, and that would be Goldman Sachs. Is it the lowest on the list as far as dividend yield goes? And then they also pay higher dividends, in the 3 and 4% range. Verizon's up at 4.85% dividend yield. So they do pay quite a wide range of dividends. When you're buying the Dow 10 strategy, being the Dow, which is what the book is based on, being the Dow with bonds that we're giving away, you're trying to buy the 10 highest yielding Dow Jones stocks out of the 30. So you're buying a subset of 1/3 of the 30, right, Russell? Does that make sense?
Yes. Okay. You said there'd be no math, Dan.
Okay, sorry. So now I'm going to do some more math.
I've been putting up with this for years.
I can do 1/3. I can do that.
Okay. So let's talk about yield and what yield is. And I want to explain that because there's probably somebody out there that doesn't know what I'm talking about when I say this. Okay. The yield of a stock, the dividend yield is the number we're referring to here. The dividend yield of a stock is just the dividend in dollar amounts divided by the price. So if your price is $20 and your dividend is $1, that's 5%. 1 divided by 20.
And the dividend is the money that the company pays out to shareholders.
After
based on
profits. Well, hopefully based on profits. That's what it's supposed to be based on. It's not always based on profits, though. They can pay out a dividend without a profit. It does happen. So, but basically, dividends are one of the reasons that shareholders own stocks is for the cash flow, which comes from the dividends primarily, of course. And so the blue chip companies, their stock doesn't move a whole lot. You know, Walmart stock isn't going to move an enormous amount probably in a given year, because for them to increase their sales 10% would be a monumental task, to say the least. So they pay bigger and bigger dividends as these companies grow bigger and get more established. They pay bigger dividends over time to entice investors to invest in their company and stay with them. And it's also a way for them to distribute their profits rather than having to put them all back into the company. So that's part of why we have dividends. We'll talk more about this formula after the break.
And there's the whole keep shareholders happy thing.
Yes, very much so.
There's that. All right, if you'd like a free copy of today's book, Beating the Dow with Bonds,
Dan will be happy to send you a copy absolutely free. Just call his office at 918-398-8387.
Do leave your name and address so they know where to send the book. That number again, 918-398-8387. You're listening to Money Talk on News 102.3 and AM 740 KRMG.
Feels bad. I feel inside. Keeps on playing all these songs about rain.
Mark playing all the songs about rain today. Thank you, sir. Welcome back to Money Talk here on News 102.3 and AM 740 KRMG. Coming up here in about 8.5 minutes, your top story is the KRMG 24-hour Fox News Center and your forecast for Fox 23, which will tell you basically the rain will end. Clouds are going to hang in for another day or two. Next hour, we have Fox News Sunday. Meanwhile, Dan is giving away books, and this one, I don't remember us giving this one away. Is this a new one?
I'm not sure if we've given it away or not before on this show. I don't think we have on this station.
All right. It's called Beating the Dow.
Beating the Dow with Bonds by Michael O'Higgins, who's the developer of the Beating the Dow strategy, which has been around for many, many years. We'll send you a free copy of the book and information on our equity-linked CDs for you to look at. It's all free. Just give me a call at 918-398-8387. That's 918-398-8387. Just leave us your address when you get our voicemail, and we will send that information out to you absolutely free. No cost and no obligation whatsoever. So we were explaining yield before the break.
And dividends.
Yes, yield and dividends. Yield is just the dividend divided by the price. So if the dividend is $1 and the price is $20, you're looking at 5% yield, essentially. So if the price changes and it drops and then the dividend stays the same, your yield goes up because your denominator changes,
right?
Basically gets smaller. So your yield goes up. The ratio goes up is what it is. And this is what Beating the Dow is trying to take advantage of. When a stock, the strategy believes, well, it's a value strategy, first of all. You're trying to buy stocks that are beaten up in price. And I'll give you a couple examples as to how and when this happens. And what you're trying to do is capitalize on a stock that's been beaten down in price, but that you think is going to recover eventually, which the Dow stocks normally do recover, because as we know, they don't usually just go out of business. They just come back. It may take them a while to come back, but they normally do come back. And I'll give you some very clear examples of when this has happened, for instance. So let's say it's 1989, Russell.
I remember parts of the...
And you're ExxonMobil, and if you're ExxonMobil, you really remember this year. Your stock's at, say...
Ship accident.
Yeah. Your stock's at, say, $20 a share. You're paying a $1 dividend. You're plodding along, and all of a sudden, you spill a couple drops of oil, you know, in the water.
or a few million
barrels.
Or whatever. Barrels. Okay.
Yeah, yes, correct. And everybody goes berserk over it, and your stock price tanks. So, which is literally what happened to them. Their stock price did drop from the Exxon Valdez incident, which I'm referring to, obviously. And I shouldn't make light of it. It was a very serious incident, obviously. It was a lot of oil, an awful lot of oil.
Yes, it was.
And it had an ecological disaster, you know, written all over it, basically, is what it was. So their stock price drops and their yield jumps up because the dividend stays the same. So your stock price goes down, your yield goes up. Welcome to the Dow 10. You're a member of the club, so to speak. And so that's how they ended up in there. And you know what? They didn't go away.
Well, Exxon's still around.
They're still the biggest oil company in the world, as a matter of fact. And they're still in the Dow Jones. They're still in the Dow 30. So if you bought the stock in 89, you probably did pretty well. You probably would have done very well after the incident. And some people did. You know, some people went out there and did it. I'll give you another example of it that was a very challenging example that was no fault of the companies at all, which was September 1982. We'll go back further in your memory, Russell. See if you can remember that far back.
Kind
of. Anyhow, Johnson & Johnson had a bit of an episode. with their Tylenol product, where
somebody was poisoning
nut job, for lack of a better term, decided to put cyanide in their capsules, the Tylenol capsules, and killed a few people. I mean, is what it did. Killed several people, as I recall. And it was a horrible incident. And I'll tell you, the company handled it extremely well. Johnson & Johnson did exactly what they should have done. They did all the right things. Their stock still dropped, and their yield went up, and you could have bought the stock at a good discount. And they're still here. They're still around, Steve.
So that's a little bit of that strategy called buy low, sell high.
Yes. And you're buying based on the yield. Really what you're doing is keying on that ratio, which is the yield. So basically you're waiting for that price to drop, and it pushes the yield up. So you run out and you buy the stock. And with the Dow 10, you only buy the stocks once a year. You buy the 10 highest yielding Dow Jones stocks. You rank them once a year based on their yield. So 1 through 30 based on yield, you buy the 10 highest yielding stocks and you hold them for a year. A year and a day later or longer, you would replace the two or three that you'd fall out of the Dow 10, let's say, and buy the new ones that come in there. You want to hold them for a year and a day for a reason. I said that a year and a day is the amount of time required to get long-term capital gains, the cap gains rate, which, as we discussed last week, is a lower rate than the ordinary income rate. If you sell them before a year and a day, you pay the ordinary income rate. So you don't want to do that with this. The other reason is the strategy dictates that you hold them for a year, so you might as well do a year and a day, because then you get the long-term gains rate. And it, for some reason, it's 366 days. That's the rule. It's government. What can I say?
Well, because of those leap years.
That I'm trying to help for that.
Maybe that's what they were thinking. But that's all I can think of. But that's the rule. So you always want to hold them for a year and a day or longer. And if you're going to do the strategy, and you got to follow the strategy. And I've done it for many years. There's different ways to do the strategy. There's a couple ways I can think of that you can do it. You can do it in the individual stocks, which is what I do for larger clients, because they want control over the capital gains and losses when we sell them, and because we have control over that. You can do it through unit trusts, and there's also some closed-end funds out there that offer it now. And so there's different ways to do it, several different ways to do it. But, you know, you just have to look at it and do some research. You know, do your research, read the book, look into it. I would highly recommend it.
And you can get that book absolutely free. All you got to do is pick up the phone and call Dan's office at 918-398-8387. Do be sure and leave your name and address, because it's Sunday. Dan's here and nobody's at the office. 918-398-8387 for beating the Dow with bonds. Absolutely free. More Money Talk after the break on News 102.3 KRMG. News 102.3 AM 740 KRMG coming up here in about less than half an hour. Stay tuned for Fox News Sunday. Remember, if you got questions for us today, you can give us a text at 95920. Meanwhile, Dan's giving away a book that could help you make some money.
That's right. I like this book. It's called Beating the Dow with Bonds by Michael O'Higgins. He's the developer of the Beating the Dow strategy back in 91 or 92. And it's an excellent book all about his strategy and the different iterations of his strategy, which there are several different ways to do this. As a matter of fact, we'll send you the book for free along with our information on our equity-linked certificates of deposit. You can get the information in the book for free. Just give me a call at 918-398-8387. 918-398-8387. Just leave us your name and your address, please, when you get our voicemail, and we will send that information out to you as soon as possible. And Mr. Steve, I think you have something you want to say?
Yeah, pretty excited. Those regular listeners know we're kind of a football-oriented show here sometimes. And for those of you waiting for college football or the pros to start, well, AAA level minor league football starts here in Tulsa a week from yesterday. Next Saturday, the Oklahoma Thunder were back-to-back national champions in the Gridiron Developmental Football League. It is very high-level football. Players that you know, Trey Johnson from TU, Prentice Elliott from OSU, Calvin Barnett, OSU. We have a lot of guys that you watched play in college, and we start 7 o'clock. Last year we played in Catoosa. We thought we'd be in Catoosa this year, but they had some stadium issues. So we will be at East Central next Saturday, 7 o'clock. If you'll text us at 95920, I've got some tickets I can give you, or get hold of me on Facebook, I'll give you some tickets. And just to put this in some perspective, at the end of the year last year when we were crushing people, we had like 4X Cleveland Browns on our defensive line. So made it a little tough. But those are the kind of guys we get, D1 guys, ex-pro guys. So please come out and support these guys. It's next Saturday, 7 o'clock, East Central High School, the Oklahoma Thunder football team.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't watch pro football. I follow the Browns, so I watch the Browns instead.
Oh, man. Ow. Oh, man. Did you see that look Mark gave you, man? That was tough, man.
That's the team I grew up with. What can I say?
So on the other end of the spectrum, by the way, when was the last time the Oklahoma Thunder lost a game?
Probably we lost one about 3 years ago.
There you go. Yeah. Those guys are doing – maybe the Browns need to pick up some of those defensive linemen, bring them back.
Hey yeah. I'll tell you what. Last year we had Brandon Shepard from OU. He's up at an arena league right now from last year, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are looking at him. So that's the caliber of guys that we have. Our wide receivers are unbelievable. Quarterback Brandon Newey, All-American at UCO. So, I mean, these guys out. They work out. They're not. I always say they're just not a bunch of old fat white guys trying to relive their high school days. This is excellent, excellent football. And you can meet the players. They're all nice guys. They like to meet the fans. So, again, it's next Saturday, 7 o'clock at East Central.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. And I want to talk about something we rarely talk about on this show now.
Annuities?
No. that's not where I was going with that. Okay. That's a good guess.
No, actually, not a good guess. We talk about those a lot. Okay, go ahead.
Closed-end funds. I wanted to talk about closed-end funds. Half the people, probably more than half the people that are listening right now, have no idea what I'm referring to.
That would include me.
There's three others in this room, yeah. As a matter of fact. So.
Right. They probably have no idea what this thing is, what this animal is. I'm going to try to explain to you what it is. There's two types of mutual funds or funds in the country. One are referred to as open-end mutual funds, and the other one are referred to as closed-end mutual funds. Open-end funds are the ones that you think of and you think of as mutual funds. Russell and Steve, I'm pointing to, sorry. And when you buy your Vanguard fund and your 401k or whatever it might be, that's an open-end mutual fund. Okay, Russell?
Okay.
XYZ stock fund from Vanguard or from Fidelity.
So your basic vanilla mutual fund that I put money in.
Yes, those are called open-end funds. And they're called open-end funds. The reason they're called that is because they have an open-end of number of shares. Every time you add to your 401k, and you automatically invest in whatever fund it is, whatever your money goes into, XYZ fund, they issue more shares. They create the shares for you because you're actually buying them directly from Vanguard or from Fidelity, whoever the company is. And so it's called an open-end fund because then when you liquidate them, the number of shares goes down because they close them out. They pay you back, buy your shares back from you is what they do. So the number of shares the fund has fluctuates every day, up and down and up and down and up and down. And then the manager of that fund has to manage the money based on liquidations, redemptions, and new money coming in and new money going out. And I can tell you, when I move money in and out of those funds, it's $6 to $10 million per fund in one day.
So there's a lot of money.
And I'm one advisor. Think about that. Right. I'm just one advisor in the country.
In little old Tulsa.
And out of hundreds of thousands in the country, right? So there's about 700,000 advisors in the United States. So just think about that. That's a lot of money moving in and out of a fund on a daily basis, every day for these funds, especially for some of the bigger funds. So the fund manager has to manage for that cash flow because he has to meet that demand pretty much that day. If I want $6 million liquidated, he has to be able to pony up the money that day. Doesn't mean he wants to. He doesn't have a choice. Okay, that's just his job. Okay. The other thing is open-end funds are the funds you see advertised on TV every day on Fidelity and Vanguard, all those things. Those are what we call open-end funds. I don't think I've ever seen a closed-end fund advertised on TV, and I'm going to explain why you don't see this. Closed-end funds have a finite pool of capital. It does not change, okay? So if I issue XYZ closed-end fund, or if I'm the manager of XYZ closed-end fund, when it's issued, let's say I get $100 million. We raise $100 million for the fund, and all the investors put in $100 million. My pool of capital is that pool forever. It does not change. So I manage it going forward. Now, I can grow it or shrink it, depending on what the market returns are and everything. It will go up and go down, yes. But I don't ever have to raise cash for liquidations. I don't ever have new cash coming into my fund. Does that make sense? So when Russell, when you buy shares of the closed-end fund, you're buying them from Steve. You're not buying them from me.
Whereas so it's on more the of a peer-to-peer deal.
Right, just like a stock trades. They trade just like stocks. So you buy them from another investor who's selling them is what you're doing, instead of buying them from the fund company itself. So I'm not involved in the transaction as the fund company after issuance. Once it's issued, I'm not involved in it anymore. Now at issuance, I'm involved, of course, in that and everything. But so that's the difference in these. So the closed-end funds are a finite pool of capital, and they can be managed entirely differently. Another thing that closed-end funds do that is very interesting is, A, they don't advertise, so they don't have advertising expenses because I don't need to advertise. Why would I bother to advertise? My pool of capital does not change, right? If I stay with the same amount of capital, the reason the open-end funds advertise is to raise capital, to bring money into their fund, right? I mean, that's exactly, and that makes sense, I mean, to us. But closed-end funds don't need to advertise because their capital never changes. The pool they have does not change based on advertising
and
at
any
all.
Any buying and selling that happens
within that fund, right?
Or no, between investors.
Between investors.
He's talking about shares of the fund. He's referring to shares of the fund.
Right.
Steve. And so, yeah, it's between you and Steve. It has nothing to do with me.
So let's walk through this slowly. So you, Dan, are the company that's going to issue,
right,
that put together this fund, and you have $100 million. So you buy, you invest that $100 million.
Yes.
And Steve is one of the people who ponied up dough.
Right.
To get involved in that. And then he decides that he's going to retire. He's going to get out. He sells it, but you don't sell it for him. He sells it directly to me.
He sells it on the exchange to you or to somebody else, just like a stock.
Okay.
Most closed-end funds have three-letter symbols, just like stocks do, and they trade from person to person. They don't trade through the fund. I have nothing to do with that transaction after issuance. Now, at issuance, which is called primary market, yes, I'm involved in that, and you're buying it from me. But after issuance, you're buying it from someone else. Okay. Like, it's just like a stock, same way a stock works, exact same way. And so that's all I have to worry about is just making sure that I run my pool of capital as efficiently as I can run it. So I don't need nearly as many people because I don't have marketing, I don't have sales, I don't have advertising. An open-end fund has to have all those things and has to pay for all those things, mainly being advertising, being very expensive. You know, TV spots nationwide are terribly expensive. So I don't need to worry about that. So that helps me to also to lower my overall expenses, which means potentially the investor can get a better return because not paying as much in overhead, for lack of a better term, okay? And one of the other things that closed-end funds do a lot that people probably are not aware of and that open-end funds don't do usually is closed-end funds are allowed to use leverage. They can borrow money, they can go long and short at the same time, and so they can get to potentially, not always, but potentially higher returns by using leverage. So if I have $100 million, let's say in the example we gave in a closed-end fund, I could borrow $50 million and invest $150 million for my investors. So potentially getting a higher return if my bets are correct. Let's just put it that way. They could also work against me, of course, if my bets are wrong. Leverage works two ways, as we've seen in the radio business. I can think of a company for whom that didn't work very well.
Yeah, they're having a bad year.
Yes. So, leverage is a double-edged sword, to say the least, but many closed-end fund companies do use leverage. Some use it more than others, and they don't always, not all of them do. I'm not trying to say they do. But one of the other things closed-end funds do that I like very much is there's a group of closed-end funds called covered call funds. And so they'll do like the Dow 30 or somebody else and write covered calls on those stocks to raise income, to pay a higher dividend to the shareholders. And they're just selling calls on it, which is an option strategy. I don't want to go too far into that, but it helps raise income and generate income for the fund. So if the yield on the stocks is 2% and they sell calls, they could pay, say, 7% yield overall to the clients and still get the stock appreciation price in the stocks. So a lot of closed-end funds do things like that. There's a lot of closed-end funds in the high-yield arena that do high-yield bonds, things like that, as well as the Dow 30 stocks. There's lots of, I think PIMCO has numerous closed-end funds that do high yields, as a matter of fact. And so there's a lot of different fund companies out there that are doing this and that offer these types of, like, you want to ask me something?
So let's say a fireman's fund, policeman, retirement system, a teacher's retirement system, their money is going to go into open-ended funds, correct?
They do both.
Okay.
The pension systems actually get fairly complicated with their investing. And I've been to many pension board meetings for the police department, I can tell you, down in Oklahoma City. And they actually invest in private equity, hedge funds, timber, real estate, direct investments, things like that, because they have billions of dollars that these people are running down there, you know, and so they can invest in pretty much anything they want to. But a lot of times they do buy open-end funds, yes, and individual stocks, yes. But your typically open-end funds is where you'll see 401ks, mostly, almost all 401ks are in open-end mutual funds that I know of. And a lot of private investors, you know, I deal a lot with open-end funds with my models that I use that we've talked about on the show here. And so those are mostly traded in open-end funds also. Open-end funds are good. They're not perfect, but they are good for us, especially for smaller investors. You know, back in the day when they came out, you know, if you had $1,000, you could buy a mutual fund and get, you know, 200 different companies, get diversification, which is a huge benefit to an investor. Yes.
Okay. So now, and not really to get too much into politics. So the corporation should pay their fair share. Crowd, understand where their fair share comes from, because we've talked about dividends all day. This is what investors get. This is the return on your investment. You get some dividends, right?
Right.
The only two places for them to pay their fair share, first of all, keeping in mind corporations never pay taxes, they only collect taxes, your dividend is going to be less. The teacher's dividend is either going to be less.
Yes.
Or the consumer, the purchaser of the services of that company, is going to get higher. There's no other option for the corporation to pay their fair share.
Right, they're going to pay a higher price for the product. Yeah, the consumer
pays a higher price,
right?
Or the teacher gets less in their dividend,
yes,
because the tax has got to come from someplace. And those are the only two sources from which that tax money can come.
Right, and typically companies will raise their prices when they get hit with the tax.
Well, yeah, yeah. Like if you're a shareholder, you go, yeah, raise the price. Don't take it out of my pocket.
They will try to offset it by
absolutely
raising the price.
Yes.
And one of those tax hikes was to diesel. We will all...
Yes.
Pay that 3 cents per gallon, I promise you.
Exactly.
We're going to take a quick time out. If you'd like a free copy of today's book, Beating the Dow with Bonds, call Dan's office at 918-398-8387. Do please leave your name and address so they know where to send the book. 918-398-8387. More Money Talk after the break on News 102.3 KRMG.
Too big for his bed. Nothing seems to fit those raindrops are falling on my head and they keep falling.
My room, I know to you, it might sound strange, but I wish it would rain.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Welcome back to Money Talk here on News 102.3 AM 740 KRMG. Coming up here in about 9.5 minutes, your top stories of the KRMG 24-hour Fox News Center and your forecast from Fox 23. Stay tuned. Next hour, we've got Fox News Sunday. Remember, if you've got a question for us, you can text us at 95920. And Dan is giving away books on how to beat the Dow with bonds.
That's right. It's called Beating the Dow with Bonds by Michael O'Higgins. And I misspoke earlier, Steve. I said it goes into gold. It doesn't go into gold. It uses gold as an indicator whether to buy short or long-term treasury.
Right.
Sorry, that's what I meant by that. I apologize. But anyhow, you can get a free copy of the book and information on our equity-linked certificates of deposit. It's all free. Just give me a call at 918-398-8387. 918-398-8387. Just leave us your name and your address when you get our voicemail, and we will send you the book and the information. Absolutely free, no cost and no obligation whatsoever. And I like this book. Michael O'Higgins has been around doing this strategy for 20 or 30 years now, so a long, long time, and I think it's done pretty well. Fairly well over the years, as a matter of fact. And I want to recommend to you, if you're interested in the strategy, look at a website. There's a website out there that's very good and goes in depth on this strategy. It's called dogsofthedow.com. Dogsofthedow.com is the website, and it gives you the returns of all the stocks and the yields of the stocks and everything.
So usually when you say something's a dog,
that's not good.
That's not a good thing.
Well,
unless they're hunting, then they're good.
Yeah.
It's. I guess they're like in the doghouse, and they'll get out eventually, hopefully.
Oh, so that's the
concept here. But anyhow, they're considered the dogs of the Dow because they've been beaten up and they've been kicked and they're down and they're down and out for a while. But they come back too.
Low price.
Right. Exactly.
There's your buy low, sell high thing.
Yes, and this is a rather simple value formula. It's one that has worked pretty well over the years. It's not perfect. It has its down years, just as any strategy will eventually. But it's a concrete formula that you can follow very easily. And that's why it was so popular when it came out in the early 90s, was because nobody else had anything like this. Nobody had a simple formula for doing this that worked with blue chip stocks, especially with value stocks. And the formula, the discipline, the nice part of it is it tells you, A, when to buy it, and B, it also tells you when to sell it. because the stocks, you sell the stocks once a year, as I mentioned, a year and a day you hold them for, and you re-rank them. And when you re-rank them, if you have ABC stock that's in the Dow this year and next year, and its yield is 4%, and next year the price goes up, and so the yield drops to 2%, it's going to fall out of the Dow, out of the Dow 10. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So then a year and a day later, you would be selling that stock. So you have a discipline for when you buy, and you have a discipline for when you sell. And both are equally important for any strategy, in my opinion. And the nice thing is, in the meantime, you don't do anything. You have to sit tight, Steve.
Which that's some hard. People, I mean, no, that's hard.
Some people just can't do that. But the nice part is, it takes about 5 minutes a year to do this strategy. It's well, not. This isn't rocket science.
But that's the key, is to have a strategy.
Absolutely.
And to, you know, use the strategy, not base your decisions on the emotions or the news headlines of the day.
Well, that's exactly right. And the problem is, if you get into a bad market, people get caught up in the headlines of the day, like we had in February and March, well, and like with Brexit last year.
Well, still been pretty volatile this last week. We saw a lot of ups and downs.
Oh, yeah. And we're seeing that. And the other thing is, you know, you get into an episode like Brexit, or you get into an episode like we had with Greece back in 11 and 12 and or 2008, people just get whipsawed by the headlines every single day, and they pay way too much attention to the headlines. The average person, let's say the average investor in Tulsa, let's just say, doesn't look at the TV news, but twice a year maybe, okay? Let's say they look at it twice a year. But you get into an 08 market, they're looking at it every day. Right. They're scrutinizing it every single day. And they always, always overreact to whatever the news is. The market always overreacts to whatever the news is. And it just will kill you emotionally if you let it do that. And the other thing is, there's no point in worrying about it, in my opinion. You shouldn't be overly worried about what the investments do or don't do. You can't control them, no matter how much you worry about them. You're not going to be able to control what they do, I can assure you. I wish I could control them. I can't, I can tell you.
Well, you know, the analogy that you always use is we don't check the price of our house every day.
Right.
You know, you buy it, you buy it when you buy it, you sell it when you sell it. You don't pay attention in that intervening 10 or 20 years or whatever.
Yeah, and you know, I wish that we could tell people when they buy something, a stock or a mutual fund, that they cannot sell it for 10 years, no matter what. No matter what that investment was, I wish we could just tell them you can't sell it for 10 years. And that's what hedge funds do. When you put your money into, if you were to buy into a hedge fund, for example, they tell you you're not getting your money out for 10 years. Well, that's why they end up making money on them. The same with REITs, real estate investment trusts, which we've talked about on the show, that are illiquid. They can't get their money out for 7 or 8 years, and in the end, they end up making money because they can't sell it. And so it actually works to their advantage. It's like what you're saying with the house example. This is why people make money on houses, because they can't sell their house in 30 seconds for $7. Thank goodness. Can you imagine it if you could? I mean, people would be moving every week.
Yeah,
you know,
it'd be a mess.
Moving every week in and out of the neighborhood and everything else. And, you know, people, the house is a huge investment for people. It's also a unique investment because we get the benefit of living it at the same time, and it appreciates in value at the same time. So it's, you know, I've seen many people over the years invest in real estate, and I've not seen one that's lost money. I'm not saying you can't lose money in real estate. You can, obviously. But people tend to do well at it because they tend to own houses for a long period, for, you know, many years or many decades in many cases for most people. My parents, my mom lived in the house I grew up in until she died. Yeah. We bought it in 1964. She died in 2001. So she was there for a piece.
37
years. Yeah, she was there for a day or two. I thought she didn't do math.
I can do adding.
So,
I could do that.
We can, man.
Okay. That's a question that, you know, it's just real estate is a different animal. And real estate has always been a good investment, in my opinion, for most people in the United States. I mean, I don't know about in other countries, but in the U.S., it's typically been a fairly good investment. The other thing nice about real estate is it's easy to see where the trend is. It doesn't move real fast. It doesn't whipsaw. Trends in real estate last for years, you know, for 5, 6, 7 years. Trends in the stock market last for seconds, it seems like, by comparison.
Would the 2008 bubble, would that be the exception of that rule? Because we saw houses, like in Florida, for example, that were $2.5 million, all of a sudden they could not sell them for $1.25 million.
Well, and 2008 was a good example of the real estate market. That's what the market does. It corrects. And when it corrects, all markets, they tend to overcorrect. When they go one way or go the other, they go to extremes, whether it's a bubble or a correction. Real estate did the same thing. It overcorrected, right? It went to lower than it should have gone. And it did it here in Tulsa, too.
Not as bad. We kind of escaped.
We did miss a lot of it. You're right. But this is the way real estate works, is it tends to go in cycles. And so when it's in a downward trend, it stays that way for several years. And then it reverses eventually and goes back up. And that's typical. We've seen, you know, pretty much nationwide. Now, California and Arizona had some extremes back in the 08. Arizona got hit pretty hard because they were in a huge bubble, obviously. But, you know, I think if anybody, everybody in Arizona knew it. You know, I think they knew it when it was happening. I don't think they were ignorant to the fact that it was doing that. I think it was pretty obvious what was going on.
Yep, absolutely.
So I do like real estate as an investment. I think it's been a real good investment for years for many people.
All right. Well, it has been another Sunday with the Money Talk guys, Dan Witham and Steve Money. Always enjoy it, gentlemen. Thank you so much. And we are here live and local on KRMG every Sunday from 10 to 11. Up next, your top stories, the KRMG 24-hour Fox News Center and the forecast from Fox 23. I'm Russell Mills. Have yourself a great Sunday afternoon. Fox News Sunday is up next.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.